number one sports site in the world.
Live from the Quick and Loan Studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. Nighttime is the right time.
You're on the nighttime now.
It's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
They run left through C.J. Anderson. With the ball, C.J. runs hard. C.J. is going to have a first down, and this baby is over. Denver is going to win their fifth consecutive AFC West title.
Alex Smith will throw for the end zone. High leaping catch made. Touchdown, Kansas City, Demetrius Harris.
Carolina up 24-3. Newton will keep it himself. Dives up the middle. Touchdown, Cam Newton. And the Carolina Panthers are on their way to 15-1 and home field throughout the NFC playoffs.
Russell looks. He looks to Curse's side. Curse's got a little room. He makes the catch. He is in. Touchdown, Seahawks.
Bradley Pinion to hold it. Kyle Nelson to snap. Ball down. Kick is up. Kick is good. And the 49ers close it out with an overtime win.
From the shotgun with Peterson to the left of Bridgewater. Peterson gets the carry. Fights his way up the middle. Pushes through a tackle. And he's into the end zone for the touchdown. 11th rushing touchdown of the year for Adrian Peterson.
Tony D with you.
This is Tony D working the third shift.
From the Quick and Loan Studios, here's
Tony D.
Tony D.
That is the great Dave Logan with the call on KOA in Denver. The C.J. Anderson first down touchdown, and the Broncos go on to beat the San Diego Chargers. Boy, if the Chargers had any sort of team whatsoever, they could have rolled today. Five turnovers Denver had, but San Diego couldn't get anything done in return. That Denver defense is for real. KCFX in Kansas City, Alex Smith, a touchdown pass there as they beat Oakland, winning their 10th in a row. They go in as the 5 seed in the AFC. Carolina WBT with their win. They go to 15-1 on the season, beating the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Cam Newton, a touchdown run. He actually had 4 touchdowns on the day, 2 through the air, 2 on the ground. He is going to be the MVP. Cairo in Seattle is the Seahawks win over the Arizona Cardinals, and the Seahawks, a very, very good team heading in. They'll play the Minnesota Vikings. San Francisco KNBR out there as they get a victory for Jim Tomsula. Not good enough to keep his job, but nevertheless, they gave him one to close out the year anyway. And the St. Louis Rams, by the way, all they needed was a win to get to 8-8. And instead, they lose again. It's the 9th straight year with a losing record. Jeff Fisher, well done. I know not all 9 years are your fault, but the time you've been there, it is. Minnesota over Green Bay, KXFN, as Adrian Peterson, the touchdown run there. The Vikings win the NFC North. How are you? Tony D here on Yahoo Sports Radio, taking you through the night tonight. If you just joined us, we are breaking down Week 17 and the teams that are right now heading to the playoffs. Let me ask this question. I asked Frank Schwab of Yahoo Sports this earlier tonight. If you were to take all 12 of the teams that are in the playoffs and you were to just seed them regardless of conference, you might have the number one team as the Carolina Panthers, and you might have the number two team as the Arizona Cardinals. Could the three team be Seattle? Could the three team on your list still be in the NFC? Where would your top AFC team be on your list of 12? Because right now, when you look at the AFC, who is the best team out of that? As he said earlier, there are teams that are just really, really flawed right now in terms of injuries, whether it's injuries or quarterback controversies or, you know, banged up play or whatnot. I would be hard pressed to put any AFC team above the way, for example, Seattle is playing.
You could argue the fact that you could do 1-2-3 NFC with Carolina, Arizona, and Seattle, and then you could do 6 straight AFC teams, and then the rest of the NFC.
The rest of the NFC. Do we? No, because look, the Vikings are a nice 11-5 team, but I don't know if I believe in them enough to make a run through the playoffs.
No.
And the same thing with the Packers. The Packers looked really exposed.
The Packers are a mess.
They really are a mess. Really are a mess. So you got the two teams out of the North that I don't really quite believe in. I never really believed in the Redskins. I'm 9-7. Thank you. At least it's not a losing record, right. But I'm not going to jump up and down on the Redskins right now. So I've got three teams out of the 6 in the NFC. And then, yeah, you're right. Take the AFC and shuffle it any way you want. And let's be honest, you could make a legitimate case for every team in the AFC. And you wouldn't be wrong. If somebody called this show tonight and said, I think the Kansas City Chiefs are going to the Super Bowl. Man, I you could sell me on that. You couldn't sell me the Redskins. If you called it to give me all the points out of the Redskins are going to go to the Super Bowl, you couldn't sell me. You couldn't sell me on the Packers other than Aaron Rodgers, but I still think they're just deficient in a lot of things right now that even puts them, even with Aaron Rodgers, in a position.
Aaron Rodgers hasn't even looked good. That's
no, he hasn't even
part.
Looked good,
no,
right?
No, he doesn't look good at all.
So even if you get the reset button, I still don't think it's going to work for them. And the same thing with Minnesota. As much as I like their story, I think Chris Gates said it best. They're kind of a year ahead of schedule.
Yeah.
So when you get that, you're going to have some bumps along the lines, and it might cost you a playoff situation, like against the Seahawks. But you can tell me any team in the AFC that they could go to the Super Bowl. You'd have to kind of sell me a little bit more on the Texans than any of the teams. But let me, I've got to be honest. If I wake up tomorrow and the Texans are in Super Bowl 50, I wouldn't be shocked. Not because the Texans are a juggernaut football team, but because the other teams are flawed enough that really anything can happen.
Well, especially when you look at they're getting Hoyer back. When you look at Hoyer against the rest of the AFC quarterbacks outside of Tom Brady, it's not like he's like way overmatched, and they have the number one receiver in DeAndre Hopkins.
Right.
They have a couple other decent receivers, and their running games with Grimes and Alfred Blue has been fine, and we all know about the defense.
If I woke up and I found you told me the Redskins were in the Super Bowl, I wouldn't believe you. No. If you told me the Texans were in the Super Bowl, I could believe that. Of course I could. Because look, just go through the list of the AFC. We've been kind of doing it all night tonight. I look at Denver now, I don't know what the hell's going on there. I just can't even, there is no situation at quarterback where that position is now locked and done and confident. Bronco fans, I'm sorry. You are, whether it's Osweiler or Manning, if you're honest with yourself, you would tell me, I feel nervous with either guy. I still look at Manning and I still see the guy that just doesn't have that kind of velocity in his throwing interceptions. Plus, we all know that he chokes in the playoffs. And with Osweiler, there are moments where the offense can't do anything under him. Anything. Completely void of any sort of life. And then there are times where he can score 4 touchdowns and a half like he did against the Steelers. So and put on a show like they did against the Bengals. But they are capable of such long stretches of offensive ineptitude that it makes them very, very vulnerable in the playoffs, regardless of where they play this game. So now the Patriots, their offensive line is right now a sieve. They're basically grabbing anybody they can to try to block for Brady. As long as you've got Brady, you've got a chance. But injuries are starting to affect this team. And they're very, very vulnerable. Right. Same thing with the Steelers. Right now, the Steelers are not the team we saw a couple of years ago. Roethlisberger is getting too careless with the football. The defense is not being able to get good pass rush and make some stops. And D'Angelo Williams is hurt. And if he's not effective, play or effective, the Steelers running game is in a bad position going into the playoffs because they do need to run the ball. So the Steelers have a lot of these flaws as well. They're not the team nobody wants to face. They're a little bit off of that team. When we saw them a couple of weeks ago, yep, they looked really dangerous. They had a game against the Seahawks where they put up so much yardage and points against the Seahawks, it's still lost. Then they beat Cincinnati, even though Andy Dalton was hurt, and they beat the Denver Broncos despite being down by a bunch at halftime. But that's not the same team that we've seen over the last 2 weeks. Kansas City? I don't think they could get in a high scoring game. If you can get a high scoring game, I don't know if they can. Probably could, but that's not their MO. So every team in the AFC is flawed enough that if you told me the Houston Texans, despite their 9-7 record, look, they're playing good football right now.
Yeah.
I mean, they're playing good football. And this is why the old cliche works when you say, well, everybody's, you know, at 0-0 when it comes to the playoffs. That's right, because the season is long enough, injuries change everything. You don't know how a team is 10-6, or how a team is 12-4, or how a team is 9-7. Look, I would rather take it. I would rather believe in a Kansas City Chiefs team that's winning 10 in a row at 10 and 6 than or 11 and 5 than I would be a New England Patriots team that's beat up like they are at 12 and 4. So I will take the AFC and anybody right now. That's how wide open that is. All right, 800-777-2907. You want to get into the conversation again at Tony D Radio on Twitter. If you'd like to chime in there, Facebook, Tony D Radio Show, like us there. If you haven't already, we'd love to get to know you, and or just 800-777-2907. Coming up, I want to get into some college football. We did have the bowl games over the weekend, the New Year's Day bowls. And there's one conversation that has occurred after the New Year's Bowl I'd like to address regarding the Rose Bowl. Next on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
All right, we're talking NFL playoffs now that we're heading there as the season has come to an end, but we just got done the college football playoffs last week and the bowl games on New Year's Eve, New Year's Day. I don't know if the New Year's Eve experiment's going to work out all too well. Those ratings were not very good. I think a lot of it had to do with the games. The games were kind of a blowout. I mean, Clemson rolled rather easily, and boy, Alabama just stuck it to Michigan State. But it was an impossible tradition to start immediately. You want to own New Year's Eve. You don't come out and say, we're owning New Year's Eve. Change your plans. We own it now. It's not how traditions work. They're the worst when you force them. Traditions usually come out slowly. There's usually a game comes on. Maybe you add another one. You add another one. It becomes part of people's normal holiday lore. And that's how you do it. When you have the college football people saying, we're going to own this day. Well, you don't own this day. You know who owns the day? Ryan Seacrest owns the day. Sorry. Before him, Dick Clark owned the day. That Times Square thing is big. People watch that all over. And it doesn't matter. Sports fans, non-sports fans, it doesn't matter. People watch that stuff. And it's they see the acts. They want to see the ball drop. They want to yell and scream. They want to party. They want to hang out with loved ones, whatever. If you're going to own that, you better figure out a way to get the non-sports fans to agree with getting in there. Look, I love the fact that I have a job that gets me, that has me watching sports. It's kind of the built-in excuse when I really just want to watch it as a fan. But I'll tell you right now, I have no idea how in the world I get out of that with my wife. None. And the ratings showed it. And it was an uncomfortable night to watch ABC and ESPN sort of doing dual cross promotion when you have hundreds of thousands of people watching the ball drop in New York City when they weren't watching games. I mean, it was just this weird, weird cross feeling. It was just not working. Now, maybe if the games were close, maybe if the games really were tight, maybe the ratings would be different. Maybe people would have stuck around longer. Much easier to go to a party when you look on the scoreboard and Alabama's winning by a lot. But here's the thing with sports. A couple of things about ratings that people need to understand. One, in the end, you, me, Adam, whoever, we shouldn't care about ratings. I couldn't care less if 5 people watch the game I want or 50 million people watch the game I like. That doesn't matter. It's not going to change the fact that these games are going to be on TV somewhere, sometime. So if watching the college football playoff is your thing, then watch the college football playoff no matter when. It's never not going to be on TV. It's going to be on TV somewhere at some time. If that's your thing, you watch it, you watch it. It doesn't matter whether you're enjoying that experience with 5 people or 50 million. But I just didn't like the way college football said to many, many people across the country, you know what? New Year's Eve, whatever you were doing before, irrelevant. Now you're doing this. Have a little respect for the tradition that you're trying to to upend. New Year's Eve is a real deal to a lot of people. It's a chance to go out. Let me tell you, I have 2 kids. My wife and I don't get out very often. We don't go to a lot of places. The one thing we like to do is go New Year's Eve somewhere, whether it's to a friend's house or go out downtown Nashville or wherever. It's hard to get away. But if you are trying to make a business out of this, if this is something you're trying to do, the problem with televised sports is it doesn't need sports fans. It's already got sports fans. The NFL already has you. College football already has some of you. NBA already has some of you. Right? What it needs is the guy who can take or leave it. There's always going to be people that tune in, and there's always going to be people that will never watch no matter what. You probably know those people. No matter what, they will never watch. Okay. Then there's this large group of people that may watch if it's convenient or if it's compelling or if it's some shared experience they want to be a part of. But if they go to bed that night not watching Alabama beat up on Michigan State, not watching Clemson beat up on Oklahoma, then they're okay. That's the group of people you're trying to attract. That's what makes the money for the networks that are broadcasting the games. It's not you or me only. It's you or me, you and me, and a bunch of other people that they've got in there. Look at sports. Look at the way the World Series is. You ever notice when Fox does the World Series, Joe Buck, and back when he had Tim McCarver, they'd always show Fox celebrities in the stands, right? Allie McBeal back in the day, or the people from 90210, or whatever Fox show was really popular at the time. They'd have a couple in the audience, and Joe would talk about it. Because sports was used as a major promotional push for the TV shows that were on the network. Right? So they were trying to kind of cross-promote those two worlds. Hey, watch a little baseball, and then watch your favorite Fox shows. That's the audience they were trying to get to. So New Year's Eve was a ratings disaster because the games weren't very good, but also because they tried to come in and just torch your New Year's Eve tradition and said, you know what? We don't, you'll watch, you'll change everything to watch this. And a lot of people said, no, we won't. We won't. I didn't go to Alabama. I didn't go to Michigan State. And while they may be playing a pretty good football game, I ain't giving up New Year's Eve for it. So good luck to you. And that's a problem because there was a perfect day on that calendar. It was January 2nd that they could have had that game. Did you notice nothing was going on Saturday?
Nothing.
Nothing was going on Saturday.
More bad bowl games.
More bad bowl. I didn't even watch. Except the Alamo Bowl. I did watch the Alamo Bowl.
Yeah,
that was really good. That turned out to be really good. All right. Well, I will talk about the Rose Bowl coming up because Christian McCaffrey had a heck of a game against Iowa. But are some people correct about the Heisman Trophy? We'll talk about that next on Yahoo Sports Radio. Plus, more NFL because we are heading to the postseason.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
All right, Tony D here on Yahoo Sports Radio. And again, with the NFL closing out the regular season and now into the playoffs, which team has got the upper edge in the AFC? Who's going to start at quarterback for Denver? Ugh.
It has to be Manning, right?
It's got to be, right?
It has to be. If they go back to Osweiler, it will be the greatest story of the year.
And I'd like to think the fan base would explode, but they'll probably just go, yeah, of course, man. Yeah, Osweiler, of course. He's the best guy. He can run the offense. Absolutely. Absolutely. Way to go, Gary Kubiak. Absolutely. We believe in you.
They would just be like, oh, John Elway knows what he's doing.
Exactly.
He's obviously running this thing.
I remember asking this question when I was in Denver about, this was 5 years ago, when Tebow was winning games and doing it in this unorthodox style of like you couldn't imagine this lasting. I said, everyone's all excited about Tim Tebow, but what if John Elway, the guy you love the most, said, you have to trust me, he's not the guy, we're going to go get a guy. Would you follow that, or would you say, no, I know what I know? It was a really tough dilemma at the time, because you knew Elway didn't like what he was seeing there. But at the same time, fans were really going crazy. I was just blown away how flippity-flop this was coming, and it wasn't just fans. Like, I can pick on fans, but the reality was it did come from the media too. We talked to a number of guys from Denver, who said kind of the same thing. Like, no, this is Osweiler's team now, and this is where they're going. This is the direction they're going. Really, because that it didn't take very long for that to change. Now we're talking about Manning taking over the job.
They were talking about it after week one when Osweiler came in against the Bears or whatever week that was.
But as soon as that was over, like, we got our guy. Yeah,
his first game, they're like, this is it. Let's go.
And then when he beat the Patriots, forget it. It was like Manning wasn't even on the roster. It's like they well moved past. He was owning the town. Columns were written. It's over for Manning. It's now Brock's team. Well, let me just say this. If it is Brock Osweiler's team, Gary Kubiak made it very clear it wasn't for very long. Because Manning came in at the right time. And did, like, again, he threw some good passes. Don't get me wrong. He did throw some nice timing patterns. And I thought the pass to Emmanuel Sanders where he threw it before Sanders made the cut was vintage Manning. But it wasn't like there was a whole bunch of those. Frank Reich coming in and saving the day for the Buffalo Bills. You know what I mean? This wasn't that. This was Manning running an offense, handing the ball off, making a few plays, moving the offense more than Osweiler did, and scoring some points. And that's important, but it wasn't like Manning was 2 years ago Manning. But now everyone is saying, hey, look, this is his team now. Again, we go back and forth. It's crazy. All right, I want two thoughts on the Rose Bowl because the Rose Bowl was rather interesting. First of all, Christian McCaffrey, well done. That was just phenomenal. Rose Bowl record, etc. Now, let me say this. Christian McCaffrey had a great year, totally worthy of the Heisman Trophy, but it did go to Derrick Henry. Now, I will say that we can go back and forth on the merits of that vote. My point isn't that McCaffrey still didn't deserve the Heisman. He most likely should have won the Heisman. And it's certainly not that he didn't have a record-setting performance that deserves our attention. He absolutely did. Here is where I had some problems with some of the conversation people were having about McCaffrey's performance at the Rose Bowl. First of all, let me say this. Anytime that we have a performance like that happens in a bowl game after a Heisman Trophy is awarded, we love to play Monday morning quarterback and saying, see, we got it wrong. We all got it wrong. This guy should have won. McCaffrey probably should have won this Heisman Trophy even before the Rose Bowl performance. But after the Rose Bowl performance, it really did cement him as the legitimate best college player college football player in the country right now. But under no circumstances did the voters blow this by giving it to Derrick Henry. Christian McCaffrey wasn't robbed of the Heisman Trophy. This wasn't a massive conspiracy. This didn't go to an unworthy candidate when it should have gone to Christian McCaffrey. People went slippery slope way too quickly after that performance in the Rose Bowl, which was totally worthy of a Heisman Trophy and totally worthy of the conversation of whether or not people got it wrong. But it got too quickly out of hand to, hey, maybe the voters made a mistake and Christian McCaffrey should have won the Heisman, to Christian McCaffrey should have won the Heisman and it's a complete injustice that he didn't win. It's one thing to say, you know what, if I had the vote to do over again, I would have voted for Christian McCaffrey. Instead of, the voters were in a conspiratorial agreement to give it to an SEC guy who should have been nowhere near this award. That's how quickly this turned into something ridiculous. Derrick Henry had a year in which he surpassed I'm drawing a blank on the name. Herschel Walker, I'm sorry. Herschel Walker and the rushing of the SEC, which to people in the South is a very, very big deal. McCaffrey had a year equivalent to Barry Sanders and should have won the award. But it didn't go to an unworthy candidate. The Heisman Trophy went to a legitimately good football player who had a phenomenal football year. These are two worthy guys. You could argue back and forth. You could make the case for one, make the case for the other. You could argue back and forth. I'm leaning more towards, I leaned towards McCaffrey all year, but I knew that Henry would win based on how people in the South would really start piling on those first place votes based on the electoral map. But the idea that Derrick Henry's Heisman is tainted, that there should be some sort of asterisk next to it because this is just nothing more than the media conspiracy. East Coast bias. It's lunacy. You can legitimately argue back and forth, but not everything is a conspiracy. Not everything in sports has an ulterior motive. Some things do. There's no question. Some things do. Sometimes the game you get on your TV, sometimes you, the way the scheduling works and who gets the bigger games, yeah, it is something to do with that. I think there's something to be said about the Sunday night baseball schedule. I think some teams don't get on there like they should. I think it's a little too Yankee Red Sox, and it's probably for ratings and all that other stuff. But not everything is, and this is not one of those. Now, the other thing that came from the Rose Bowl, I try very hard not to mix politics on this show. You go somewhere else for politics, you probably won't get that here. But every now and then I squeeze it in. Did you see, Adam, the Carly Fiorina tweet about the Rose Bowl?
I did not. I saw a lot of people talking about it. Okay. But I honestly, like you said, I'm not a big politics guy, so I didn't even really look into it at all.
I'll follow the presidential race on the periphery. I do vote. I try to get my issues oriented, but I'm not a meet the press all the time guy. I don't watch Fox News or MSNBC on a consistent basis or anything like that. So I'm not a very politically attuned guy, but I know enough when the races are going. I grew up in New Hampshire. Politics is a big deal there. So I know enough. But I do like it when the two worlds come together and sports, when it comes to sports. I like hearing politicians talk about sports because a lot of them don't know what the hell they're talking about. So I do like that angle. I will never forget, I was working at a news talk station when Arlen Specter came in, the senator from Pennsylvania. He came in and he knew I was in the sports office, and we had like a bunch of things on the walls. You could tell it was a sports office. And he came in, and all he wanted to talk about was the Steelers. Steelers, they were playing, and they were making a run with Bill Cowher and whatnot. He just was like, hey, man, while I'm waiting to go on the show, can I sit in here and talk Steelers? It was pretty cool. We only did it for a couple of minutes. It was pretty cool. Carly Fiorina, who's running for president, put out a tweet that said, I love my alma mater, but I'm pulling for the Hawkeyes to win the Rose Bowl. This is the actual quote, the tweet. Love my alma mater, but rooting for a Hawkeye win today, hashtag Rose Bowl. Oh, boy, did people have fun with this. Talking about pandering to votes. Holy cow, did she get buried. Because first and foremost, what's the number one rule about your alma mater? You don't pull against your alma mater for whatever reason. And you especially do not do that to the people of Iowa in the caucus before the votes.
Okay, so I don't even know the whole story. Is it her alma mater Stanford?
Stanford.
Oh, okay, yeah.
She's running for president. She's in Iowa.
And she needs Iowa. Okay.
She needs Iowa votes in the caucuses that are coming up in like a couple of weeks.
Wow.
She then puts out a tweet thinking, if I just dump Stanford and pull for the Hawkeyes, people in Iowa will be like, oh, wow, we love you now, and we're going to vote for you to be president of the United States. Meanwhile, not understanding how sports fans work. If you ditch your alma mater to root for my team, I'm going to see right through that and not respect that at all.
Right.
I have a friend of mine I went to South Carolina with. He runs political campaigns for a living. I think I might have told this story on the air. He runs political campaigns for a living. He had a guy that was in was running for some house race or something in North Carolina. And so the question came up at the time, North Carolina and Duke were top of the polls. And that was the big thing. You Duke guy, you're a North Carolina guy. So he's running for North Carolina. He didn't go to either one of the schools. He went somewhere else. But he's running in North Carolina. So he asks my friend who's running the campaign, he says, hey, when that question comes up, what do I say? And my buddy said, listen, you do not, under any circumstances, say you like them both. You do not. You take one or the other but you do not say you like them both. If you say you like them both, it'll kill everybody. No one will respect you. You pick one. You say, you know what? I have respect for Duke, but I'm a North Carolina guy through and through, or the other way around. Sports fans love that. They can still vote for you even if you don't root for their favorite team. They're not that shallow. But they don't like pandering. And they have untrust for a guy that is just begging for votes and gets wishy-washy when it comes to sports. And somebody in that Fiorina camp blew it completely by telling her to pander to Iowa fans by dumping your alma mater and pulling for the Hawkeyes to win the Rose Bowl. She would be much better off saying, I went to Stanford. I could never root against my school. Good luck, Iowa, but I'm pulling for Stanford. People there would respect that completely.
So did Stanford people tear her apart as well?
Oh, Stanford people, yes, of course. She got destroyed on Twitter.
Yeah, I saw a lot of people commenting on it.
I had a good time kind of scrolling through watching the attacks.
Oh, I'm sure.
From the people that were just going, hey, what is this?
The other thing I saw you tweeting about on New Year's Eve was the whole Demi Lovato thing.
Yes,
she is
okay.
Gorgeous.
Okay, Demi Lovato, again, I'm a square dad, okay? I have to admit, I'm a square dad. I don't follow pop music as much as I probably should. I got two kids who love this stuff, and they know all the groups. My daughter knows everybody. We're in the car. She sings to every song that's on her station. Demi Lovato, I heard, but I've never really seen. I think I saw one picture of her on the cover of an album. But I've never seen her in concert. I've never even seen her perform live. I've never seen her anything. I think she was on the cover of a magazine once. And then my daughter had. I'm watching Demi Lovato, and I said to my wife, I said, is she considered hot? And my wife said, yeah, I think so. So I asked my daughter, do people think she's pretty? Is she a pretty artist? Do people look at her like Taylor Swift? She said, yeah, I think so. So that's when I put on Twitter. I got to know, is Demi Lovato considered hot? Because I think she is totally gorgeous. So and then I found out people were sending me stuff back.
That
yes.
That dress or outfit she was wearing in that her performance on New
yes.
Year's Eve that night, whew, those legs are
fantastic.
Ridiculous.
Fantastic.
I honestly stopped because during the game they kept giving updates of what performances was coming up. If you looked in the right top right corner, every once in a while they'd be like, oh, Demi Lovato in 6 minutes, and then it was 2 minutes. And then Demi Lovato now. I switched channels to go watch her the game. I stopped watching the game, and I went and I watched her entire performance. I don't even know what song she sang or
sings.
I still don't know.
I don't either.
But
that's
why I just wanted to watch her perform.
Like I said, square dad on watching TV. I was totally into that girl.
If I am not mistaken, she used to be kind of a little bit bigger girl. I may be wrong. I'm thinking of someone else. But I know over the years she's gotten a lot hotter, and now she's that short black hair and that dress she was wearing, it did it for me.
Yeah, that was good. Good New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
All right, coming up next, more on the NFL, and I'll get to the Alamo Bowl. That was a huge comeback for TCU next on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
This guy's on.
Back to him.
Back to the Quicken Loan Studios.
And back to Tony D.
All right, we were talking about the bowl games that just got wrapped up. We have the national championship coming up in a week, Clemson and Alabama. But Saturday night, the Alamo Bowl saw TCU with a comeback for the ages and beating Oregon. They were down 31-0 in the game. They lose in triple overtime. They win in triple overtime over the Ducks. It was one of the most remarkable comebacks I've ever seen. And I'm not a guy that the last thing I saw is the best thing I saw. I really try to avoid that. I don't like it when people say it, and I really try not to. But I could not find another football game in my memory banks that was quite like that. I will say the Bills beating the Houston Oilers that year was really remarkable. But this was done, buried, finished, over. And the only reason it was on my television was because it just happened to be on in the living room, and me and my wife and kids were playing Clue, and I could see the TV from the table we were playing the board game on Saturday night, and I was just casually looking up at the game and realizing that TCU kept scoring and scoring and then got a fumble and then scored again. And before I know it, I'm like, wait a minute, they were down 31-0 in this game. And now they're coming back and fighting to win this ball game. And then I finally, just after the second game, went, I think I'm going to watch the rest of this. It was a great show. In a weekend full of bad, bad, bad games. Great individual performances, but bad games. No real competition. This was a fun game to watch. I'm glad for what, I don't know what in the world. When you're in a bowl game like that, because let's be honest, I can't speak for college kids. Yeah, I was not a bowl guy. Yeah, I didn't play college football, so I don't know what it's like to go to a bowl game and be all that interested in being in the Peach Bowl or the Pollen Weed Eater Bowl or the Poinsettia Bowl. But I got to think there's a lot of pride on the line. But some guys, I can totally see college kids mailing it in. I mean, it's the last game of the season. You're getting killed. You've already got your swag bag from the corporate sponsors giving you free PlayStations or whatever the heck's in there. You just want to get out of there and call it a year. It's been a long year. You've done, you know, practices since spring ball. You fighting for positions. You're doing all of that stuff. And now you're down 31-0. You're on the road. It doesn't look good. Your fan base is sad. Nothing's going right. You've got a brand new quarterback in the game. And guess what? You start putting points on the board. And after you start putting points on the board, things start really working. Bram Kohlhausen for TCU finished with 351 yards and two touchdowns and a come from behind victory. 47-41 at the Alamo Bowl. Three overtimes. Good for the Horned Frogs. Good for Gary Patterson. Keeping the momentum up. All right, so we are heading into the postseason in the NFL. All this week we'll be breaking down the teams that are made the postseason, including teams like Pittsburgh and Kansas City and Houston and whatnot. They'll be playing that first weekend. But as we said before, the AFC is wide open. The NFC, I don't think it is. I think there's about 50% of the teams in there that have a better shot than the other 50%. I think it's Carolina, Arizona, Seattle. I think Minnesota, Green Bay, and Washington are all just flawed enough not to be able to go through that juggernaut of games. I think Seattle is a team that I've got to pay attention to now. I mean, there was a time where we were kind of looking at the Seahawks and not really evaluating them and looking at them and saying, I don't know what to expect from this team. There's been some turnover on defense. There's injuries. They're playing a different style. It doesn't look all that great. And then things started to really click for them. And now they're playing very, very well. But I still look at that conference and I say, despite the fact that Arizona lost and did have something to play for, I think the Arizona Cardinals are still a team that I think is heading to the Super Bowl. Carolina at 15-1 has everything. An MVP quarterback, a stout defense, they are well coached. But Arizona, I just really like Arizona in the NFC. In the AFC, holy cow, I have no idea. But if I'm going to take a team in the AFC, forgive me for being simplistic. I'd love to have a complex answer to the AFC, like, deep down there's two guys that are nobody's talking about, that they're the teams that are going to, when push comes to shove, I'm going to take the safe bet and take the Patriots. Injuries and everything to somehow survive that and make it to the Super Bowl. But it's so wide open, I'm hoping that that's not right. I wouldn't mind seeing a first-timer come out of the AFC, if not the Steelers. Maybe the Cincinnati Bengals, God forbid. 800-777-2907. We continue in the next hour, breaking down what's going on in Denver and the playoffs next on Yahoo Sports Radio.